The programme which follows is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM.
Hello, you're listening to Resonance FM, and this is Thursday, and it's the Opera Hour. And today on Resonance FM, we're celebrating the links between poetry and opera with Patricia, the editor of Agenda magazine, and some of her contributors, which include the poet and translator Timothy Adders, whose latest collection entitled How to Be a Grandfather, Translations of Victor Hugo's Poetry, is out now from Hearing Eye Press. Timothy, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Richard.
You're sitting right down the other end of the desk there.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. I was so glad. I can hear you too. Oh, so, Timothy, you translate poems into English from three different languages, which is an incredible feat. What first drew you to translation?
Well, it's quite a difficult question. I feel I'm better at doing that than of writing a new poem by myself. I did a certain amount of translating as a schoolboy out of English into Latin. I turned my back on that. But to come into your own mother tongue is considerably easier. And my speciality is to be a rhyming translator poet, which there are not many of, and there are not many rhyming poets either.
Now, the two poems you sent me to read, they both have links with music. One directly mentions an opera, Don Giovanni, and the other was indeed set to music by Monteverdi. Are you yourself drawn to words that reference music?
Words that reference music? Not necessarily, but I've heard quite a lot of opera over my life. I had my gap year, fortunately, in Vienna, so I was often in the opera house there. I wasn't studying music, I was studying German language. And in more recent years, I've been going, London, of course, has two opera houses. I've been going to the Colosseum fairly often. So, yes, but on the other hand, I'm not interested in opera libretti as such, and I don't set out to write them. And I don't deal with the question of how you write libretti to words to be sung. I write words to be read on the page or to be read out aloud.
Do you suppose having a love of music or an appreciation of opera, as you were mentioning, does that aid your writing and your translation?
No, there's nothing to do with it. But I use rhyme and I use meter. Certainly if the original poet has used them, then I try to do the same. But I'm not totally unmusical, so there may be a connection there.
I mean, people often talk about the rhythm of the music or pacing of music, perhaps influencing their natural sort of awareness of rhythm. But that's not been the case with you?
Well, I dare say it has. I mean, it's for other people to judge better than me. I don't know how I do what I do. I just do it.
Well, it would be wonderful to hear a poem, Timothy.
Thank you. Well, I have three little poems in this current issue of Agenda, and the one I've chosen is translated from the Italian, which is unusual for me. It was written in the time of Shakespeare by Giambattista Marino, and it was slightly later, it was set to music by Monteverdi. And it's a sonnet. It's set in the pastoral Neverland of the ancient classical world. And it starts off like this in Italian. Batto, qui pianse ergasto, ecco la riva, etc. And here is my English version. Battus, Ergastus cried, this is the hollow where the fair Chloris chased the fleeing doe and fled her chasing swain. Nor do I know if she strove more to flee or more to follow. Look, he exclaimed, you take such joy in hunting the flitting hart, you shoot it as you please, then shoot my heart. It bears its wounds in peace, even pursues you, careless of the wounding. You do not hear me out. Dry-lipped and shaking, here he fell down and lay, no longer speaking. She, cruel, briefly turned on him her eyes. Love, with new searing flames, set him alight. A humour spills from two eyes burning bright. A humour, which is fire, as none denies.
Thank you. Did you grow up in a literary household, Timothy?
No, I didn't, no. I'm quite sure of that. Although my mother tended to make up little rhymes, I wouldn't say it was more literary than that. There were books in the house, and I got all this. I don't know where I got it. I picked it up over a long period, but not at home, no. Not as a child.
And what about music? Did you listen to music as a child?
Yes. At school, there was quite a lot of classical music about. I sang in the choir. I played an instrument. I soon turned my back on it, though, as I got older, and I went back to a little choral singing later on.
Now, you must have provided a sort of very musical household for your son to grow up in, because your son indeed turned out to be a composer, Thomas Adders. What was it like watching his talent sort of shape and take form?
It was a great joy and an amazement, because I knew it didn't come from his parents. came from somewhere out there. Although I was, at the time when he was little, playing tunes, playing what used to be called gramophone records, and this kind of thing. So I think he got the idea of music as joy and expression rather than as something, an imposition that your parents lay upon you, which is sad if that happens, I think.
I would love to hear your other poem, your poem which references the opera Don Giovanni.
Well, I'd be delighted, and I luckily brought it along. It's by one of my main poets, Robert Desnos, a Frenchman whose dates were 1900 to 1945. And I hope to have one, if not two, books of his out this year. It's been a long time. And here he is in occupied Paris. He doesn't know, but he has not long to live because he's a resistance man. And this sequence, he's written with a number of learned allusions, one to an opera here, Don Giovanni, and several to the classics, and I suppose Alceste is also an opera for him. And by doing that, he was able to write resistance poetry, which evaded the censor, who didn't quite get the gist of what he was doing. So this is a short poem called The Clearing. This empty plinth, with tall trees shaded round, bears the unseen load of a marble ghost that tramples, kicks, exerts a downward thrust, driving it daily deeper in the ground. Or else, on leaving for a fatal feast, one who commands consigned it to be wrecked, as a small stone across the tideline tossed meets its own bullseye that the waves reflect. But I should hear, beside the pond at least, the fanfare Don Giovanni blows, inviting. Yes, now I hear it on the echoes riding. Beneath my feet, I sense the earth's heart racing.
Wonderful. Well, the piece of music that you suggested we listen to is something from your son's opera, The Tempest. Why this opera, and why this particular extract, Timothy?
Why this opera? Because it's my son's. It's his. I could hardly do otherwise. I've heard it more than practically anyone else except for himself and his mother. I've heard four or five different productions. It's been on twice in Covent Garden, other places around the world. And as I said, it's a matter of joy and amazement to me that he's done this and that he can do this. So I had no hesitation in picking a piece of music for you from The Tempest. And this piece, you have Prospero and Ariel. Prospero is sung by Simon Keenly's side, Ariel by Cindy Acedon. It's the London production. They're having a bit of an argument about whether Ariel should be set free, but it's her task to go and fetch Ferdinand, the young prince, who has survived the shipwreck.
Are they here?
Opera House Orchestra performing Thomas Adders' opera The Tempest there, a spectacular reworking of the Shakespeare play. And we just reluctantly faded to you there on the aria Full Fathom Five, which, as you were just saying, Timothy, is one of the pieces of Shakespeare that's mostly intact in the libretto, isn't it?
Yes, because as my son Thomas has an article in this same issue of Agenda in which he discusses the writing of a Shakespearean opera, and he says, "I was viscerally certain that any form of heritage Shakespeare would be a time-wasting horror. It was crucial to avoid the distraction of chunks of historical language. I didn't want to be like a bad tour guide, pointing out a gable here, a mullioned window there, when we are trying to find a path into the heart, into the deeper poetry, the music of the play." So Meredith Oakes has written for him a number of short, very short lines, often rhymed or nearly rhymed. But in that aria of Ariel, Full Fathom Five, it's closer, much closer to what Shakespeare actually wrote, which are famous and immortal words.
It's just beautiful. Of course, the part of Ariel is pitched so high because she's not earthbound. She's flying around. I reference that. So we are, of course, in the Resonance studio today talking about Agenda Poetry magazine and their latest issue, which...